A US sports update for TGI Fridays, home of the legendary NFL Super Bowl party.
Climbing up on Salisbury Hill, I could see the city light.
Thanks for joining us on SEN. Bit of Peter Gabriel, Salisbury Hill. Not many people get a song written for them, but I have it on good authority Peter Gabriel actually did write that song about Steve Salisbury. Good morning, Steve.
G'day, mate. It's actually my dad that he wrote it about, but that's still fine. I got no problem with any. The thing about it, though, is as well as Pete knew my dad.
Oh, really?
As well as Pete knew my dad, he spelt the name incorrectly, but that's okay. If Peter Gabriel writes a song for you, you got to roll with it, don't you?
Okay, so your dad had a hill. What do you have? Just a little mound of grass?
Yeah, pretty much. That's it. My dad had the hill. And I was just a speck of dirt on that hill.
Now, I've been plugging this all morning. It's very exciting times in the world of NFL. Eight teams became four over the weekend. Magnificent finish to that Green Bay-Dallas game. Just take us through what's on the menu coming up this weekend.
This weekend, you've got two, I think, outstanding games, like I was saying to you yesterday. You got Pittsburgh playing New England. They're the two best teams in the AFC this century by a long way. And those two teams have each been in eight Super Bowls. So the winner of this game will be the first team to ever actually appear in nine Super Bowls. So when you think about it, there have only been 51 Super Bowls. So each of these teams have appeared in 21% or 20% of the Super Bowls if they win. So that's impressive. And you've got Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger, who are two of the best to ever play the position. And I think it's going to be a fabulous game. I've got New England winning that game for a couple different reasons. But, you know, you've seen with Pittsburgh this week that they had one of their wide receivers, Antonio Brown, was doing a Facebook Live in the locker room after the game. And you just don't do that because a lot of sensitive stuff got out. Thousands of people saw it, namely the Patriots. So you're adding fuel to a fire when you talk badly about an opponent, especially somebody who's decorated as the Patriots. So I got the Patriots winning that game. They just find a way to win. They're pretty damn good at home. And then in the other game, you got the two best quarterbacks in the NFC going, probably the two best quarterbacks of the season going, and Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan. And I got Green Bay winning that game, but it's going to be Atlanta. The game's in Atlanta. I think it's going to be, like I said yesterday, the last team that scores will probably win that game because I don't see how these defenses are going to stop the opposing offense. So I've got a Super Bowl in 2.5 weeks' time between the Patriots and the Packers, and that's a repeat of Super Bowl 31, which was played in New Orleans when Brett Favre was playing 20 years ago.
Was it that long ago? Gee, it goes quick, doesn't it? I can remember as a kid.
Way too quick.
I can remember as a kid watching Super Bowls, and they do the Roman numerals for which number Super Bowl it was. Are we really past 50 now, are we?
Oh, it's Super Bowl Lee, Super Bowl L-I. I actually probably, I don't know, it would have been 10 years ago when Super Bowl 40 came, and I think the Steelers played the Seahawks in that game. I remember that season going, well, hold on a second, if it's Super Bowl 40, what does 40 look like? Because I knew 30 was XXX, and then you just, you know, I understand 1 to 10. But I actually had to go and reference. Oh, 50. So it was. It would have been L. It would have been X. It would have been LX, I think, or was it XL?
I'm anyway, just trying to remember. What's 40 is XL, isn't it? Yeah.
40 is XL. That's
I can relate to that. That's my shirt size. Sorry, my shirt size is XXL these days. I'm hoping to bring it down to an XL.
Well, maybe it's Super Bowl 30 when Brett Favre was running around.
Yeah, probably. I was definitely younger then. I wanted to talk to you about this cultural issue that continues in American sport. I'm probably a bit slow on the uptake. I know there's been, you know, a series over the years of pretty ugly incidents involving NFL players, but when the Chiefs were in the playoff last week, I read a couple of really interesting pieces about how the people of Kansas are embracing or not embracing the Chiefs, largely off the back of Tyreek Hill, but also coming 4 years after that. And I don't know if you call it, it is tragic because lives were taken, but that shocking murder-suicide involving Jovan Belcher, which obviously really heightened sensitivities about the whole issue. Has that been a real concern for people in football that Tyreek Hill, who has a pretty serious conviction on domestic violence, has just been embraced into the bosom of the Kansas environment?
Look, Tyreek Hill in particular, no, I don't think it has. But in the NFL, you've had a lot of arrests for domestic violence. And domestic violence is probably the one crime. I mean, number one, there should be no tolerance of it whatsoever. Absolutely zero tolerance. And the NFL's done, and the teams have done a pretty good job about suspending and cutting guys who have been accused of domestic violence, who've been convicted of domestic violence. I mean, I think the damning thing for a lot of these players, take Ray Rice from a few years ago. He is caught knocking his girlfriend out or his fiance out in an elevator, and then he drags her out. And it's some of the most sickening footage that I've ever seen. And the NFL was great. And the Baltimore Ravens are great. They cut that guy, and he has not been back since. And he's a very productive player. He's only 29 years old as we speak, and he's been gone. He's been banned from the league, basically. Now, he hasn't been blackballed, but he went so far this year before the season began of saying, look, I will donate every paycheck I get, every last cent of my paycheck, to domestic violence charities and domestic violence prevention societies and things of that sort. Nobody took him up on his offer. Mm. So that's the one crime. I mean, you know, you got a lot of drug convictions. Like, it doesn't bother me who got his drugs, to be honest with you. DUI, that's pretty serious, clearly, because, you know, you're taking people's lives into your own hands if you get behind the wheel loaded. But the domestic violence thing, there's just zero tolerance for that, typically. Now, there are instances like the Tyreek Hill. I think if you have evidence, video evidence, like around Ray Rice, and then this Joe Mixon, this is disgusting footage, but there's an Oklahoma running back named Joe Mixon who is in a casino 2 years ago, and he punches a lady in the face, and it knocks her out. It's horrible to look at, and this guy was able to play. And, you know, you just kind of go, look, at what point do we walk away from the winning at all costs mentality? Because that sucks. But unfortunately, the winning at all cost mentality kind of permeates a lot of the time, because if I'm a coach and I've got a player who's I can't play, you know, and you got someone who's great, I can't play him because I cut him, because I take a stance, because I domestic violence is abhorrent. If I lose games, I lose my job. So, you know, a lot of these guys, I mean, you could look at them and you could say, look, you're making $3 million a year. You know, you're fine, but there's a lot of pressure, obviously, as there is in the AFL, to win ball games. And I just think it comes down to an organizational stance. I mean, I went and I looked, and I got the names of about four players. Monty Ball was accused of domestic violence. He was cut the next day by his team. Johnny Manziel was released by his team after domestic violence allegations came out. Josh Brown was a kicker. He actually admitted to striking his wife. He was suspended by one game. The charges themselves were dropped. You know, and then Ray McDonald is a 49er. He was accused of domestic violence, and the team cut him the same day. So there have been teams who go, look, at zero tolerance. We're not going to tolerate it. If you do it, you're gone. But then, you know, there's a case of Greg Hardy, who was a serial offender. He was cut by the Carolina Panthers, but then the Dallas Cowboys picked him up the next season. So you've got to, you know, I don't know what you're supposed to do. The NFL could maybe step in and say you can ban a person forever, but then, I mean, is that really fair? So,
well, just as importantly, are the public on board with this, though? Because I suspect that, you know, when push comes to shove, the public are always going to want the player to play. You know, I think it's harder to persuade a football-loving public that the moral stance is the right stance.
I think a lot of it's probably going to be split, because whenever any of these guys play, there are usually protests out the front. There are people who say, you know, they're going to burn their tickets. There are people who take a pretty strong stance against that. But you still do have the group who says, look, you know, I love the team. This guy makes the team better. It's not my job to worry about what he does off the field. I just want him to perform on the field. I think we got to get away from that, because, again, I've always had this. I used to say when Ed Wyatt and I did our show that, you know, like baseball, for instance, had this three strikes and you're out policy around drugs. And I said, if you want to get drugs out of your sport one time and you're gone. And I said, like in some Middle Eastern countries, they might cut your hand off if you steal. Mm. That's going to stop a guy from stealing. I'm not going to steal if I know that I get caught, I'm going to lose my hand. So I think if you take a really strong stance, like almost a brutal stance, you can oftentimes keep keep people in line. But it's short of that, it's really difficult to do.
Yeah, look, it's an ongoing question. I mean, that win-at-all-cost mentality clearly has visited the AFL over the last 4 years, and I think it's left us in a darker place and hopefully, though, an enlightened place in terms of just how far clubs and individuals are prepared to go simply in order to win. We'll finish on a brighter note. Just revisit very quickly your tips for Pittsburgh v. New England and Green Bay v. Atlanta.
Just one last thing on what you said. I've got Pittsburgh and the Packers going, but the last thing I'll say on that is who accounts for 50% of the fans in these sports? Women. Mm. So make a business decision. You know, you can't sit there and take the money from the women fans and then subject them to watching players who beat women. You've got to take a strong stance. And, you know, if they look at it as a business decision, sponsors need to jump off the ship as well. If a sponsor jumps off, that's the thing that really hits these clubs and hits these leagues, because it's about money.
Good work, Steve. Looking forward to those two playoff games over the weekend, then the Super Bowl coming up a fortnight after that. I'm sure we'll be hearing plenty more of you on this station.
Yeah, you will. And I'll tell you this, the more I think about it, I'd almost say it's a mortal lock that New England and Green Bay win this week. And I'm really feeling strongly about those two.
All right, well, we've cut that audio and it may come back to haunt you. Thanks for joining us, mate. Talk to you soon.
No worries, bud. Anytime. See ya.